Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church.
Well, good morning, everybody. How's it going? I went to camp.
Are Savannah's parents in here?
Okay. She came up to me every day and told me that she knew my sister, meaning my brother. I don't know if it was camp brain or what, but it was quite hysterical. And all the girls wanted to make sure that I told Pastor Mike, my brother, that I was pregnant, which I did, but they thought it was a secret for some reason. So it's not a secret anymore. So I had a lot of fun, though. It was kind of a full circle experience for me because the campground we went to was one that I went to growing up, and so I got to experience a lot of things in my life there, especially just milestones in my faith, and that's really where I got called into ministry. What you have to know about me, I did not want to be in ministry. I kind of wanted to be different from the rest of my family. I was also super shy. My brother spoke for me. You've probably met my brother, Pastor Mike. He talks a lot, so he just did all the talking for me. And I just thought that my brother, he was in ministry. Both my parents were in ministry, so I was not going to be in ministry. I was going to be a radio DJ or a magazine editor. That was kind of my plan. Obviously, God had different plans for me. Like I said, at that campground, he ended up calling me into ministry. And when he did that, I started to realize that there were things that my family had passed down to me just because of experiencing life in the church with them, and that things that God had given me to prepare me to be called into ministry. Our families leave an impression on us, right? If you're married, you know half of your job is to remind your spouse that they're acting like their parent or someone in their family. I call my husband Fred half the time because he's acting like his dad, and I'm a mix of both of my parents apparently, so he calls me Brian or Luann. My brother likes to call me sometimes and complain about Olivia, his four-year-old, because she's being stubborn like me, but I had no influence in the making of her, so I'm not claiming that I made her stubborn, but he likes to remind me of that sometimes. So I'm sure some of you can think of some stories of having a child or a child that you knew that was acting like you or acting like somebody you know, because we pass down things. I grew up with just me and my brother, and so I was kind of a tomboy. So usually you would find me having my brother in a headlock but wearing a snow white dress and looking cute. And the favorite thing to do, we have a picture. I told you I'd bring at least one picture of Pastor Mike. It's not a very ugly one, but he's got buck teeth, so. And he's got a bowl cut. So our favorite thing to do was to play basketball, and we would get the chalk out and make our court, and my dad would always be on the losing team, like to help the kid that struggled, so he'd always be on my brother's team. And he kind of helped him out. And I noticed that while we were playing basketball, my brother and dad always spit. Like, they would just spit in the grass. So I thought, that's how you play basketball. So, you know, in basketball, you check the ball because you never know if it's going to be out of air all of a sudden. So my brother would throw me the ball to check it to me, and I would, and then throw it back to him and be, it's good. And I kept doing this over and over again. So finally, my dad questioned me, you know, what are you doing? Why do you keep spitting? And I said, well, that's what you and Michael are doing, so that's how you play basketball, right? He's like, no, no, no. That's not how you play basketball. And you are a lady. You can't do that. I, of course, did not understand this concept of being a lady because I grew up with my brother. And I just decided that I was still going to keep spinning. So my dad continues to get on to me. Finally, my brother gets involved and he says, you're supposed to be a lady. You can't do that, because my brother likes to tell me what to do. So I just said, well, I don't ever want to be a lady, and I slam dunked it right in his face. Some of that story is true, I think. But my brother and dad had passed down the art of spitting during basketball to me without even realizing it, right? There may be some things that you realize that you do, like someone else in your family. My mom is really weird about raw meat. Like, she hates sanitation, so I'm always, like, wiping the counter every time my husband is grilling. That's what my mom did. I just do it because that's what my mom did. So there's certain things that get passed down to us, whether we mean to pass them down or not. So today we're going to talk about passing down the family business. And I'm not just talking about our job or vocation, but I'm talking about our faith, passing down our faith to our kids. And, you know, for some of us that don't have children, God commands us to do this. He asks us to pass down our faith. In Matthew 28, 19 through 20, it says, "Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you." So God's given us commandment to pass down this faith, to make disciples. So if we don't have children, we could be mentoring youth or even people in our own stage of life, or sharing our faith with people at our work or people that we come in contact with. So today we're going to ask the question of, who are we passing our faith on to? We can see two examples of this in 1 Samuel. And last week we talked about Hannah. And if you weren't here last week, Hannah was not able to have children. And so she really struggled with that. And she gets so depressed that she heads to the tabernacle, to the church, and she just lays her heart out to the Lord, asking him for a child. And this is her prayer, she says in 1 Samuel 1:11. "O Lord of heaven's armies, if you will look upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son, then I will give him back to you. He will be yours for his entire lifetime." So Hannah was asking God for a child, giving him complete control, knowing that if she didn't have a child, it was going to be okay. But she said, "Lord, if you give me this child, I will give him back to you to serve in the church." So if you were here last week, you know that Hannah was blessed with a child, and she was able to have him, and he was named Samuel. And so she raises up Samuel, and it says later on in 1 Samuel that when he was weaned, she took him back to the tabernacle to live with a priest named Eli. Not really sure what age he was at, just because it was kind of generic. It could even be to 3 years old to even 12 years old. But we know that Hannah took the time while she had Samuel to pass down her faith to him. So Hannah took the time, and we see throughout scriptures that she has such great faith, and she passes this on to Samuel. In 1 Samuel 2:18, it says Samuel was ministering before the Lord, and then later on it says he continued to grow in stature and favor with the people and the Lord, and it continues to go on and on about how Samuel grew in his faith and how he ministered to the people. Now, some of you may think, okay, well, Samuel spent his time living in the church. I'm sure some of you parents have thought about leaving your children here before, but please don't. I don't think Carrie would like that very much. But you would think, okay, if he grew up in the church, obviously he was going to have a great relationship with God. Obviously he's going to be ministering before people because that was his life. But later on, in chapter 2 of 1 Samuel, we meet the priest, his sons, and their names are Hophni and Phinehas. And we see that Hophni and Phinehas are in charge of doing the sacrifices. So basically back then, if you committed a sin, you had to bring an animal as a sacrifice and an offering to God, and the priest would handle it for you, and you would be made right before the Lord. So especially back then, what they would do is they would bring meat, put it in a boiling pot, and then that was their sacrifice. God wanted to bless the priests, because pastors don't get paid very much, right? And so he decided that what he would do is they could have a fork, they would stick it in the pot, and whatever meat came out on that fork was what they could eat. That was kind of how they survived. That was their food that they got. Hophni and Phinehas, however, thought they were at Texas Roadhouse, and they preferred their meat roasted. So what they would do is they would have their servant go and stand in front of the pot, and either the moment that the Israelites would put the meat in the pot, he would take it out, or he wouldn't even let them put it in a pot. He would take it raw, would go roast it for Hophni and Phinehas, and then give it to them to eat. So obviously, first of all, they were taking way too much meat than they were supposed to. And then secondly, they were disrespecting the offering. They were just looking at it as food, not as something that God was giving them and not something that was sacred. So obviously the Israelites get upset and they come to Eli, their dad, and basically say, you need to get a handle on this. Eli at this point was older, so he was not around the tabernacle as much. He kind of let his sons do their own thing. So enough people say things that Eli decides to confront his sons. And this is what he says to them in 1 Samuel 2, verse 23. He says, I have been hearing reports from all the people about the wicked things you are doing. Why do you keep sinning? You must stop, my sons. The reports I hear among the Lord's people are not good. I think there should be a next one. If someone sins against another person, God can mediate for the guilty party. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede? But Eli's sons would not listen to their father, for the Lord was already planning to put them to death. So basically the way I read this is kind of how my mom would discipline me when I was really bad, which was like once in my life. She would always say, you just wait till your dad gets home and then he'll handle it, which meant I was getting a really big spanking. So Eli here is just saying, you guys are sinning. God's going to take care of you and you better watch out. That's basically all he's doing here. Now we know as a parent, sometimes threats do not work with our children. So Eli was obviously not handling his children very well. And even at the end, the scripture gives up on his sons as well. They say, well, it doesn't matter because they're going to die anyways, which is not very hopeful at all. So Eli could have, as the priest in charge, either taken them out of the temple, told them that they could no longer work, maybe put them on probation, or at least done something to them. But all he says is good luck, God's coming for you, and you guys are in big trouble. Now, thankfully, we know as Christians that it says in that scripture that there's no intercessor for when we sin against God. But thankfully, we know that Jesus Christ came to be that intercessor, so we don't have to worry about being basically, I don't want to say messed up, okay? So Eli has no hope for his sons, and his warning is not good enough, because God decides to send them a messenger to let them know what's really about to happen. So we see in 1 Samuel 2, 27 through 29, it says this. A man of God came to Eli and gave this message from the Lord. I revealed myself to your ancestors when they were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt. I chose your ancestor Aaron from among all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer sacrifices on my altar, to burn incense, and to wear the priestly vest as he served me. And I assigned the sacrificial offerings to your priests. So why do you scorn my sacrifices and offerings? Why do you give your sons more honor than you give me? For you and they have become fat from the best offerings of my people Israel. So basically God was calling Eli out. He was reminding them of the heritage. Being a priest was a big deal because it really was passing down the family business. God had chosen a specific tribe of the Israelites to be the pastors, to be the priests, and they passed it down to their children. So now we get down through all this generation, all of this tradition, and now Eli's sons are messing it up, and so is Eli. So God was letting him know that he knows what's going on. And even in this last line, okay, I want to look at this. First of all, we see that Eli is giving more honor to his sons than the Lord. But then it says, for you and they have become fat. So God is also recognizing that Eli is sinning as well. So we're not quite sure. Maybe Eli had been doing the same thing as Hophni and Phinehas, and that's how they learned how to take care of the meat. But I imagine it's almost like the saying of some parents have of do as I say, not as I do. And I imagine almost Eli is eating a piece of roasted meat while he's calling his sons out for doing the same thing. But we know from this scripture, God is telling Eli, first of all, you're putting your kids above me. And secondly, you're the one sinning as well. So Eli wasn't innocent in all this anyways.
So here we are. We see two different parents. We see Hannah, who's passed down her faith to her child in the limited amount of time that she had. And then we see Eli, who's a leader in the church, unable to pass down at least a good faith to his sons. We see him passing down his sins instead of his faith. So when you look at these two sets of parents, you might see yourself in one of them. Maybe you've experienced parenting as a struggle and you've been on both sides before where you feel like you did a really good job as a parent passing down some of your faith or some good things, or maybe you felt really bad before about how you notice your kids are starting to act like you in a negative way. So how can we pass down our faith to our kids in a good way? How can we be like Hannah and instill good faith in our children? Or better yet, how can we in the workplace be able to show people our faith and truly help them to understand why we have a relationship with Jesus and why we believe in him in the first place? Something I went to look further into this was I actually just went online and I kind of Googled family business, because there are some families that have businesses, you know, we have farmers or other things where they actually pass it down to their children. So I wanted to know, in the secular world, how do they look at that? How do they pass on the family business? And there was this article from Fortune.com that was called Family Business, How to Pass on the Baton. It basically gave tips on how to pass down your business to the next generation. So even though it's a secular article, there's still some truths that we can look at and take into our own lives. So the first tip they gave, it was passion to pass the torch. Basically what they were saying was you have to be passionate about your business in order for your child to be passionate about that business as well. So in our faith, we have to be passionate about our faith and about Jesus in order for our kids to truly understand what that means and to grab onto that passion as well. If we don't have passion about Jesus, then we really have to look at, do we have passion about anything at all? And I encourage you today that if you've never made that step to talk to other people that have been in the church for a long time of how they established that relationship with Jesus and how they have that passion for Jesus. And some of those of us that have had a relationship with Jesus for a very long time, it can become very easy to lose that passion. I gave my life to Jesus when I was 5 years old. I was not doing drugs. I wasn't partying. I wasn't doing any of that stuff. So I didn't have a life-changing story, but Jesus still changed my life, and I can still have passion about the things that Jesus has blessed me with and passion about how Jesus has changed my life. So for those of you that have been in the church for a long time, don't lose that passion. Don't let the situations that you've gone through, like we talked about last week with the struggle being real, don't let those struggles take away your passion from your relationship with Jesus, because we have to pass on this torch of faith to our kids. According to a recent study done by Barna.com on millennials, which is basically my generation, so 22 to 35-year-olds, says only 2 in 10 Americans under 30 believe that attending a church is worthwhile. 59% of millennials that were raised in the church have dropped out. 35% of millennials have an anti-church stance, which means they believe that the church does more harm than good. And millennials are the least likely age group of anyone to attend church by far. So this is the family this is the generation that's starting to have families, that are starting to raise children up in this world. And if more than half of them could care less about church or about faith or about Jesus, imagine what our world is going to look like when those kids are raised up and that they're adults. It could be a pretty scary place. So I'm not just talking about this church, but our church is a capital C. All of our churches have failed my generation in passing on that faith because they've lost that passion to pass the torch. So we have to understand that it's important for us to pass on that faith to this next generation so that this world can be a better place. The second tip that the article gave was ask for help. So for those of you that are parents, don't be afraid to ask for help. I've seen you sometimes, you need help. especially when he got like three or something, four, some of you. So don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid if you're a single mom or a single dad to ask for someone in the church to be a mentor to your children, to be that father figure, that mother figure. And for those of us that are either empty nesters or don't have children, it's our turn to step up and to be mentors to those people, to take notice of those families that might need help, whether it be financially or just they need a break. They need like an hour break. I told my brother last night, woo, Olivia and Brayden were crazy. So I told Kate was getting ready to go out of town tomorrow. I said, I'll watch them just go get coffee for like an hour or something. And when they came back, they looked so much more refreshed because they didn't realize that they needed that time away, that they needed that time together as a couple, but they just needed a break from the chaos and the craziness. So don't be afraid to ask for help, and don't be afraid to offer it as well. Can you imagine what it would have been like if Eli would have asked for help raising his children? Maybe it would have been a different situation. Hannah had help. She left him at the church and said, see you later. But she also did what she could to constantly meet with him and instill her faith in him. So Hannah had the opportunity. She asked for help. She brought him to the church, and she had others involved in Samuel's life helping him raise up. But we can't say the same for Eli and Hophni and Phinehas. So the last tip they gave was this: pass the equity early. The author talked about how he had his sons take on part of the business when they were even just teenagers, so that they would begin to understand what the responsibility was. He quoted this: we trusted them with our business early, and they became much more responsible and accountable because they were owners of the business early on. So we have to challenge the generation underneath us to take ownership of the church and ownership of their faith. I love seeing videos that my brother posts of Olivia coming to the church and asking everybody to come to church, because I know that she's learning that church is important, and her favorite part is coming and turning on the lights at church and get the coffee going. That's her favorite thing. And I know that as she gets older, she'll begin to even build on that foundation. But right now, even at 4 years old, she's starting to take ownership of the church, and it's her church. This is the place where she feels like she belongs. So we need to help the other ones to understand that this is their church, that this is their faith, and they need to take ownership of it. So if you serve at church, whether it's you're greeting at the door or you're doing the coffee bar or whatever it is, how can you have your kids involved with you? And how can you help them to understand why it's important that you serve in the church? Because we can pass that equity on much earlier. So statistically, I found another survey that Lifeway did, and this was on basically teenagers that dropped out of the church when they got to college. So the moment they got to college, they stopped attending church. They found another group of teenagers that stayed throughout church throughout college, and they said there were four factors that they noticed that made a difference in these teenagers' lives. So the first one was, I wanted the church to help guide my decisions in everyday life. So they felt like the church was so important that the decisions they were making were helping them do that. The next one: my parents were still married to each other and both attended church. So that just goes back to passing the faith. It's important for parents to be involved in a loving relationship with each other, but also a loving relationship with Jesus Christ and the church. Next one: the pastor's sermons were relevant to my life. Now, this is my brother's problem, not yours. and I know he's going to listen to this later, so I'll just go ahead and say this. But, I mean, it's just like if you were an adult, if you feel like nothing is being spoken to you in your life, you're not going to get anything out of it. So we have to be careful of the things that we teach to make sure that our kids also understand that as well. Next one: at least one adult from church made a significant investment in me personally and spiritually. So this is where we all have to pitch in. This is where we all have to look at our teens and our young kids and even our young adults and say, how can I invest in them in their lives, not just spiritually, but also personally? And it's not that hard sometimes, especially with little kids. You just take them to Sonic, or you show up at their soccer game cheering them on. and they'll know that you think that they're important. And that's what our kids today need to hear, is that they are important. And so if we can do these things, we can pass the equity early, and I believe it will truly change those factors that we looked at earlier that had to do with millennials not wanting anything to do with church. I hope that those factors can change if we start doing these things and taking on the passion to pass the torch. So I'm going to have the band come up, but I want to close with just explaining how Eli's story ended. In 1 Samuel 4, the Israelites are in trouble. They're in a battle, and they decide to bring out the Ark of Covenant, which is basically represents God to them. And so they think, okay, we're losing this battle. We need to bring out the Ark, so that way maybe we can win this battle because God will have favor on us. Philistines were fighting with the Israelites, and it ended up that they saw the Ark of God, and they saw it as their opportunity to take it. So they take over the Israelites, they take the Ark of the Covenant, and basically the Israelites are left hopeless. Remember earlier how God told Eli, your sons are going to die? His sons died in that battle. So Eli, in the midst of this battle, he's too old at this point to fight. He's blind. So all he's doing is just waiting on the side of the street, waiting to hear what happened in the battle. So a man from the battle runs down the street, and when he finally finds Eli, he tells him what happens. He tells him that his sons have died and the Ark of God went missing. And just like that, Eli fell out of his chair and then he died. I don't know about you, but that's not how I want my story to end. I don't want to just be sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what happens with our church or with my generation or with these younger kids. I want to be actively involved in these kids' lives, in my generation's lives, and help them to understand why God is so important. Why is it such a big deal? And so I encourage you today to think about the things that we talked about and how can you pass on that faith to your kids? Who are some people involved in your work that you may need to have a conversation with? Who are some people in the church, who are some families in the church that you can take on, that you can mentor, that you can help them out, just like what we talked about? Don't be sitting on the sidelines just waiting to hear how it all ends. Be active and make a change.